53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. It is indeed time for parenting. Once again, Joanna Fortune is with us. Once again, Joanna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
First question is this. My 14-year-old son recently came out as gay. He wants to start dating and we are encouraging it. However, he's not open in school and it's making him put a stop to dating. He's nervous of the other boys' reactions in school. We're not sure how to help him and encourage him, but also protect him, as it's such a new thing for us.
I think, look, you're doing a great job. You know, you've clearly, you know, embraced this news and you're providing support for him, and just keep doing that. Remind him, though, that you will support him no matter what. But I wouldn't push him telling his friends if he's feeling not ready. And I wouldn't presume, because, you know, he's saying, I'm nervous about their reactions. He may just not be ready to say it in school, and that's okay.
Sure.
You know, I would let him telling his friends be his choice at his pace. Given it's only recently that he's told you, he might need to sit with your positive reaction and really feel and process that and integrate it before he begins to tell others. And I think that's okay too. I like that, you know, he wants to start dating. You're encouraging that. But like you would with any 14-year-old dating, you know, you want to also hold that within the confines of at your own pace. Don't feel any pressure. Mm. You know, you're welcome to bring anyone home. We love meeting new people in your life. That kind of way. But don't get too involved. You know, don't, in with the best of intentions, don't get too involved in the dating.
Yeah.
He'll work all of that out. The other thing is, and I'm wondering, and you'll know this, that he's worried about the boys' reactions in school. Have the school got, and I'm sure, you know, look, I don't want to say I'm sure they have, but many schools do, have, you know, a proactive or stated policy of inclusion, of tolerance, anti-bullying, that they don't tolerate any, you know, hate speech or name calling, things like that. It would be worth looking into that and just reading it with him at home.
Don't
saying,
all schools have that?
But having it and having it.
Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah. There's a piece of paper.
Yeah.
We'll wave this piece of paper.
And that's what, I mean, if you've to think, gosh, does my school have that? Then I'm thinking they're not that proactive about talking about it.
Mm.
And I think if you could find out where the school is at with that, sit down with your son, talk through and assure him that actually there is a policy there to protect him. And if any of the boys did step out of line or did upset him or call him names, that he has a wraparound support system. But even beyond that, within school, he has his parents at home who will not jump in and fight the battle for him, but will support him in dealing with whatever response he gets. And also, let's not assume 14-year-old boys will be overly negative.
Yeah.
You know, they really, it's a different time to be a teenager now. And I'm not saying that as in it's a, you know, a bed of roses now. I don't think it is at all. But I still think that we do have a more tolerant teenage generation. Just sometimes boundaries are an issue at 14, no matter what it's about.
Yeah. And people will, tease
flagging
each other.
And name calling is part
for
of it.
Any reason.
Yeah.
But I mean, the fact that he's 14
and
told his parents he's gay, the general environment he's in is obviously a very positive one.
Absolutely.
That he can feel he can do that. And, you know,
and not only say that he's gay, but say, and now I'd like to think about dating.
Mm.
And I'm sharing that with you. So there's a great openness in communication in the relationship. So I think hold on to that. Whatever comes next, that's going to stand to him.
You know, it actually strikes me, this is kind of slightly off the point, but people still use the phrase come out.
I know.
As if it's a hidden thing.
And I think that's why
he's probably just realised himself, you know.
When I was saying, I was like, he's going to tell his friends. I was aware that I don't know about that word come out, like he has to or is obliged to do something. But it's a very common phrase.
No, it's a very common. But I suppose from the days when people knew but maybe kept it secret. But he probably just realised it himself and thought, hang on, oh yeah.
I just want to make you aware.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. But there is something that he's hesitant about with school and opening up to school friends. So I would just say, you know, do the whole accepting that and empathising with him that it's hard, you know, when you can't predict with certainty how people will react, because maybe that was a certainty with his parents. Mm. Maybe he knew my parents are going to be okay with this.
Yeah.
And so there wasn't that same heightened level of emotion around it. But with school, you can't predict what many, many other kids are going to say or do. And that's anxiety provoking. So rather than, you know, push him into doing it or tell him you'll go talk to the school, maybe sit with him in that anxiety and support him in feeling his way out of it.
Yeah. My son is 7. Recently, his school has been running an emotional well-being program and includes a workbook with lots of exercises designed to help children deal with feelings and worries and focusing on resilience and happiness. One of the modules was dealing with sadness. In his workbook, there was an exercise where the children had to describe or draw a time that they were sad and when a sad thing turned out to be not so bad after all. He left the box blank, so I asked him about it. He told me he has a big sadness and he doesn't want to tell anyone about it. Ever. I probed him about this, but he would not tell me about it. Some months previously, he had had a fight with his sister and she had upset him, and he told me he would never speak with her again. I told him he couldn't go through life like this and told him the story of the bag of stones, in that every time we have a fight or worry or anger towards someone, it's like picking up a stone and putting in a bag and carrying it with you. If you keep picking up the stones, the bag gets heavy. It's harder to move around and go through life with it. A lot of adults actually should hear that story. I told him we will always pick up stones, but we have to learn to throw them away and forget about them. That way we're not burdened by a big bag of stones. The other night he said he has one stone in his heart and he was going to keep it. The reason is to remind him never to do this thing again. I probed a little further and all I know is there is another child from his class involved and he wouldn't tell me who. He tells me he will never tell me, and I was to stop asking. All I know now is that happened last year in senior infants. This is all so odd, and to be honest, I'm worried. I just want to know what is the stone in his heart. I've told him I wanted to share his stone and help make it lighter, but he is saying nothing. Normally he can't keep a secret for anything. He loves telling me things, and I really thought he felt he could tell me anything. He has been telling me occasionally over the last few months he's feeling sad. This is usually at bedtime. It breaks my heart. I thought if I was probing, I would get it out of him, but I keep trying, but I think I will never find out. Is probing the right approach?
No. Like, and I totally get it. That's what I'm saying, like that. I totally get it. If it's your 7-year-old, all you want to know is, what is it? Tell me the story and I will fix it. Mm. But actually, you have to respect the boundary he's putting in place here. The stone analogy is such a good one. You know, you can do the bag of stones, you can do the bag of worries. There's a lot of creative ways around this, but you've done that and he's been very clear with you. I don't want to speak to you about this. He's aware he can. Mm. But he's choosing not to. That being said, I don't like the idea of a small child holding on to something and ruminating on it for such a long period of time. So it's about really thinking of ways that invite him to release it without telling you what it is. And I think that's very hard for parents. It's easy for me as a professional, because that's my role, is to facilitate young people and adults to release something in their way. But as a parent, you're like, no, thanks. I want to know what the thing is. But what is a big sadness or even the small stone in his heart for him? It might not be the big thing you're now imagining in your head.
Yes.
Just to be really clear about that.
Yeah.
It sounds to me, and this is my inference because I haven't met him, but it sounds to me like it's a guilt, a regret, or even some kind of a shame that something may have happened between him and this other child, and he has regret because he says he's holding on to it so that he doesn't do it again.
Yeah.
And there's something about, oh, I really crossed my own moral boundary there and I need to hold on to that as a learning. But you don't want him beating himself over the back with, this is the no good, bad thing you did, you know. And again, we really want to emphasize, and this is where you could come in, that we can make mistakes. All of us, grown-ups, children. In fact, we do make mistakes, and it's important that we do, because that's where learning comes. We learn from the mistakes. But if we do a bad thing, that doesn't make us a bad person. We are not the bad thing we did. We are a person who maybe made a mistake or maybe made a poor choice. And that after there's been a rupture or a falling out with a friend, you can make repair. You can say you're sorry. You can say it won't happen again. You can take responsibility. And then you learn from that. You don't have to hold on to the feeling so that you learn. It's what you do with it that helps you learn. Yeah. So you could do a kind of proactive piece around that. But when I talked about, you know, releasing something without him telling, there is a little way that you could do this creatively, which is to have him write or draw or put something that represents this little stone into a balloon. Blow up the balloon. He puts it on a piece of paper, rolls it up, you know, I'm going to say like you were rolling a cigarette because I can't think of anything else, but roll it up, push it into the flat balloon, blow up the balloon and tie a knot and bring it somewhere windy and let it fly away. So he is releasing that thing he's been holding on to. Mm. The difficulty is, as the parent, you don't know what's in the balloon.
Yeah.
It's gone.
It sounds a bit though like he doesn't want to let go of it.
Well, it's because my inference reading this or hearing this is that he doesn't want to let go of it because he feels he should be punished and should be learning from it. Mm. And again, you really want to let him know that actually the learning from it is what you do next, yeah. not hanging on to it. So you got to let it go. And then what was the learning from it? So if you've upset a friend, how would you fix it? Or if you and a friend, maybe it's even more him and the friend did something.
Mm.
Maybe they took something, or maybe
they were mean to somebody.
You know, that he can take ownership for his part and he can make repair. That's really it. It's not holding on to it that makes it better. It's what you do with it.
Mm.
But children need help with that. I mean, yeah. there's a whole load of adults who need help with that, but children definitely do. I think you could also maybe offer, you know, a carefully edited, modified example of your own to say, look, you know, I remember when I was younger and I used to keep a stone in my heart, I'm going to tell you the story of my stone. And your expectation is not that he then tell you one back, and be very clear, but you're choosing to share with him.
Yeah.
So that he doesn't feel like I'm the only one who does this or this happens to, because he sounds like a sensitive little guy.
Oh God, and very bright as well. Because I love the way he adapted the story of the bag of stones into, you know,
and here's
something
my stone.
More profound.
Yeah.
Really.
And I just, you know, when he fell out with his sister, he was adamant, I'm never going to speak to her again. Mm. And there's something, you know, a pattern there about, I don't ever want to feel this way again.
Mm.
So I'm just going to cut it. That's it. She's done. That's it. I'm holding on to the stone forever. Because I don't ever want to feel that way again. And you have to help him to understand that feelings are a part of us, but they're also transient. They come and they go and they change and we change. And there's lots of, like, he's seven, but you could still use something like, you know, The Big Bag of Worries is a nice book, or Dr. Seuss, My Many Colored Days, that talks about feelings as colors and how they can change on different days. We can be different colors.
Mm.
And it's about that inside and outside language. But I just think talking about what he does next or does with feelings. But I think you've got to back off from this particular stone.
Yes, yeah. Which is really,
really
hard to do. Really hard to do. Right, my six-year-old daughter has some issues with her hygiene. If her nose is runny, instead of getting a tissue like I've taught her time and time again, she rubs it on her sleeve. The arm of the couch, my sleeve. Even her brother's head once that I've seen. She picks things out of her teeth or her mouth that she's chewing and drops it on the floor. She burps and won't cover her mouth. It's like she's not aware of what she's doing. I'm honestly embarrassed to take her out in public or visiting family for fear they'll judge me. Bath time is a struggle, as is teeth brushing. She just hates anything about cleaning. I'm at a loss with her. Please wave your magic wand, Joanna.
Oh, God.
Well, just, she's six. Yeah.
The visual of wiping her nose on her brother's head, we shouldn't laugh, but it's very funny. I mean, yeah, I get this, because actually she's six. But by the age of six, children do know how to manage basic personal hygiene. They might be good at it now, I hasten to add. Like brushing one's teeth at six may be about wetting the brush and moving it generally around your mouth, but is that proper hygiene? No, you probably need to check, and they need gentle reminding, gentle yet firm reminding. Because just because they can do it and they know how to do it, it doesn't mean they will. But especially if they feel like it's a chore, like especially if they've decided this is the thing you nag me about, then you're actually going to find them going, oh no, I don't want to do that. That's a hassle. That's a chore. That's no fun.
Mm.
So you actually first have to find out what the issue is. I mean, I've met with many children who hate brushing their teeth, but it's a sensitivity to the toothpaste. It tastes stingy or over strong, the mint. And maybe you can get like one of the more fruity flavors of toothpaste. But finding out basically what the main issue is for her, is it that it's just, you know, it's not interesting, I'm not bothered, it's a hassle, it's something you give out to me about, so I avoid it, or I just don't care because I'm six and I have, frankly, far more interesting things to do.
Mm.
So then you have to shift the personal hygiene from being a chore to being something that's more fun. And that, and again, I'm not making assumptions here, but I know in many homes, by the time you're trying to get them in the bath and the teeth brushed, it's like, because you want them in their pajamas and into bed, so you're like, come on, come on,
absolutely.
do it.
Yeah.
And that's not fun. That's a hassle.
Yeah.
And especially if I need more time with it. So I might suggest that you take her with you, just her, to a shop and have her involved in selecting some hygiene products for herself, like a toothpaste, a shower gel, a bath product, you know, something like that, a nice sponge, a new hairbrush, little bits like that, that she picks. Then you could arrange, you know, once you've covered, if you've other children, well, you clearly do have at least a brother whose head is being used, arrange a pamper session. You know, that you can just, you know, run a bath for her, sit with her, sing songs, play music, read a story, just have time with her that isn't hurried or isn't harried while she's in there. While she's in the bath, don't get into that lecturing, preachy mode of, now, isn't this nice? Shouldn't you do this more often? Avoid doing that because you're killing the fun as soon as you do that. Just have her feel that it's an enjoyable experience and ensure it's not rushed or manic. Like, make sure this is something you've time to spend with her doing, and then create a hygiene chart, like some visual checklist that you can just either do it in picture boxes or pictures with a little box beside that she has to tick. Not a star chart like I get a sticker for doing it, but just, yes, I did it for herself. Not that you're going to go in and go, I checked it and you didn't, because maybe she didn't, she forgot to tick it, but that she has it there as a prompt.
Yeah.
So draw out a list with her again, sit so she knows what's going on it and why, laminate it, stick it in the bathroom. And all you say is, did you run through your checklist? Have you made sure you've done everything on it? And that's it. And trust that she's going to get it. I know people can say she won't do that, but she might do it. Because I also think that you're saying here, it's like she's not aware of what she's doing. And I think you have to make her aware, but in a gentle way. Mm. Firm, but gentle, not shaming. Don't be saying, don't be doing that, that's disgusting, or, you know, anything like that. Maybe have a nonverbal cue that you agree with her for public transgressions, that you can, you know, pull your earlobe while making wiggly eyebrow contact with her. At home, be more direct and say, I think you forgot how we eat. I think you forgot how we wipe our nose. I think you forgot how we whatever. Try it again. And let herself correct the behaviour with that prompt. There are a couple of books that sprang to my mind reading this too. There's Mo Williams. Many people might know Mo Williams' Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus, which is talking to kids about peer pressure and not giving into it. But there's also a Mo Williams book called The Pigeon Needs a Bath, and the pigeon's like, no, I don't. And it goes through how the pigeon needs to be convinced and coaxed into the bath. And it's a nice way of doing it. Margie Palatini has one called Gorgonzola, a very stinky saurus, which again, because again, when you're 6 years old, it's nice to think about these things at a removed level, that, you know, you can not that you then say, see, you're like the stinky saurus, but that you trust that she'll get the symbolism of the book through repeated reading and maybe drawing it out and thinking about the stinky saurus together. But I think you've a few things you could try there. But yeah, it's just not interesting to her, and it's clearly feeling like a hassle.
Yeah. My son will shout, tissue, when he needs to blow his nose. It can be any time of the night or day, from any part of the house or garden. It's like the Batman call for me. I hear tissue when I come running. I tend to keep tissues permanently up my sleeve, ready for action, like a utility belt, if you will. That's a possibility. Right, we do have to take a break after that. A two-year-old with a fear of pooing.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to ReproMed, IVF and fertility experts with clinics nationwide. Begin your fertility journey at ReproMed.ie.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent. Joanna Fortune is still with us in relation to the six-year-old who likes to liberally distribute her snot on her brother and other places. Sign her up for swimming lessons twice a week, two birds with the one stone. The wiping of the snotty nose is just a quick fix for her. It's not on purpose. She's not going to seek out a tissue the way adults would. Clearly a baby's head makes far more sense for her. I suppose, the idea is you just want to get rid of it as soon as possible, it's really not
conscious, but yeah.
The little we had that story about the little fella who is sad, who has a stone in his heart, and it seems to be for something that he did that he regrets, but he won't tell his parent what it is. Would the teacher know anyone, someone says, but again, it's, as Joanna was saying, it's not really about knowing what it was.
It's about sticking with the feeling with him and helping him out of it.
God love him, maybe get him to write it down and burn the paper or throw a stone into the sea to represent his stone. Someone else says, no one has mentioned forgiveness. Little child needs to forgive himself for whatever he feels he has done wrong, just as others forgive him.
That's
sound advice there. Another texter says, now this is on the subject of the 14-year-old who was just told his parents that he's gay. Now, there are gay kids in my daughter's school and they are all so lovely to one another. No hate. As far as I know, anyway, there is no bullying and all the kids are happy in their environment. It can be such a positive thing for kids to live their truth. I hope this boy finds this happiness too in his school. Though someone else says, is 14 not a bit young for dating? regardless of orientation.
Oh, that's a parental choice. And, yeah, you know, that's why I was saying that when it comes to dating, regardless of orientation, that you hold any parental boundary like you would. And it's about really saying, I'm interested in meeting the people in your life and the people who are special to you, and feel free, you can bring them home. Mm. It's not about, you know, booking a table for two and getting over involved in it.
Yeah. Right. I'm at a loss and heartbroken by my 2-year, 3-month-old son. He seems to have developed a fear of pooing. I believe it occurred from a painful poo incident about 4 or so months ago. It can take him 3 to 4 days or more of constantly shaking his legs, clenching, fear in his face, looking at me, mommy, for comfort when he feels he's about to poo. It happens close to bedtime. He even asks to go to sleep so he doesn't have to go through the discomfort. But this ends up with him waking during the night in discomfort. He's somewhat of a picky eater, but loves every type of fruit. We've tried foods like pears and also tried a Movicol, but it's not working, as more fear than constipation. He also only seems to be able to concentrate on pooing when he's in a quiet place. But this doesn't always work. I've read you're not supposed to give it too much attention when he cries out, "Poo, mummy." And we do say to him, "Everyone poos. It won't hurt. It'll make you feel better. Do you want to sit on the potty, etc.?" He's not potty trained. But nothing has worked. We're heartbroken, as he had a particularly difficult morning and he was upset and squeezed his bum while walking into the creche. It may also be helpful that he does have a sensory or touch issue, in that he won't touch sausages or cooked eggs, etc. And he only barely touches Play-Doh, but we'll get his hands dirty with sand, etc. So it's unknown objects, foods he won't touch. We do encourage messy play, and he's much better, but it takes a lot of encouragement. Please help.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I think, you know, a fear of pooping, what goes in and out of the body, is something children learn quickly that they have, you know, a larger degree of control over than any other area of their life. So when they place this emotional charge or the struggle around it, it's a difficult one to get rid of. The fact that he did have that painful poo incident, you know, 4 or so months ago, is likely to have been, yeah, the trigger, to be honest. Now, I know you're saying it's more fear than constipation, but, you know, chicken and egg as well, you're likely right, it's fear, but that could cause constipation, yeah, and that will then, yeah, in turn cause increased pain, which cause increased fear, and that cycle will keep going round. So I would bring him to the GP just to make sure he hasn't gotten impacted and doesn't need some help with that as well. If the Movicol hasn't worked, he might need something a little bit more prescription based, yeah, just to get you back to starting point, if you like. I always recommend the book because it's so visual and so relatable to kids. Everyone Poops by Taro Gomi, and it's a Japanese book, but it's translated, and it's just such, it talks about how, like you're saying, everyone poops, but it does it in a visual way. It shows elephants and mice and people, and each page really explains the process in quite the visual way that kids really respond well, yeah, to. So it's a super little book. I think the sensory play, it's interesting. He is a little avoidant and tactile averse. So I think you're right to keep directing that and introducing it. I'm going to suggest that you, because he doesn't mind sand, that you actually take some wet sand in a little funnel into a balloon again and fill a flat balloon, fill it up so that it's quite solid with the wet sand, and then have your son squeeze it so that it comes out of the balloon in like a sausage shape.
Yes.
I'm being,
okay,
very literal with how I'm describing,
yes, yeah,
things
pretty
today.
Much, yeah.
And
that, okay, Mom, I,
yeah,
get it.
That he, you know, because that's very helpful. It's a sensory piece, but it's also visual, and it's triggering the process of his body as well. So do that and repeat it and repeat it. Refill it up. Do it again. Do it over a number of days, especially days in a row if you can. Because it's a pity he won't use the Play-Doh. And I'm wondering, have you tried making it with him so that he actually sees the Play-Doh being made? He can touch the flour before it's wet, and you know that he's part of the process. Might that help? The other thing I think would be handy, just to increase the sensory play that isn't in a really sticky, messy way, is to take something like dry grains of white rice, add a little bit of food dye, make it coloured, have him, you know, run his fingers through it, pour it from one, you know, vessel into another, even let it spill onto the floor, and in his bare feet he can stand and dance on it. And again, you just sweep it up afterwards. But because it's dry sensory stimulation, it may be more tolerable for him than that more wet, messy, tactile stuff,
yeah,
that he is resistant to. I think that's going to help a lot. But I think do all of that. Certainly begin all of that and keep up the sensory play. But I'd like you to bring him to the GP at this stage.
Yeah. She says, though, he's not potty trained. So I assume he's wearing a nappy. So you'd think, yeah, if he goes to sleep at night, you know, nature would take his course.
Not if he's developed, if it's really painful.
Could you do that?
But if he's now impacted,
it
won't just come.
Yeah. Okay.
It would need effort.
Yeah.
And that's why I think I'd like him medically checked as well.
Oh, the poor little fella.
It's very hard. Yeah. So, and it's such a hard symptom to deal with. You know, once children have done it, like put that charge around it. No, I can't. It's a very difficult one. So lots of calm, lots of patience, use a lot of swaying rhythm, you know, put him in the bath when he's feeling like that. Let him sit there a while and just rub his back and sing to him and just really do that as much tactile touch stuff as he will allow until you can try and get it back on track.
Right, one more quick one. My wife and I and my almost 11-year-old daughter are always at each other's throats and argue about almost everything. It's breaking my wife's heart, and she now believes that my daughter doesn't even like her. My son is almost 13 and is completely unlike his sister and is his mum's blue-eyed boy. He enjoys school, whereas my daughter really doesn't like it at all, even though she has some great friends there. My wife does tend to blame her for things before she knows who it was. I can understand this, as my daughter has been known to tell little fibs when she does something wrong. She's very sporty and my wife takes her to basketball, etc. But it is me who always plays the games with her outdoors, as my wife is always too busy to do so. In my daughter's eyes, I can do no wrong, although I am the stricter parent and she never plays up to me. She also asks me to sleep beside her most nights, which I do. Is this adding to the problem? One more thing, at dinner time, would you advise giving her vegetables she doesn't like or stick to the ones she does like, as this causes problems as well? She eats all meats, fish, pasta and some veg. Any advice would be great.
Okay, I'm going to start kind of...
There's a bit of answering your own question in this.
Yeah, I'm going to start at the bottom and work up. You know, should you make her fight over vegetables when she already eats a really good, varied diet? No. Pick your battles.
Great.
This isn't one of them. So if she eats some veg, give her plenty of that veg. She has a good diet. So there are problems here. Let's not make that another one. You're asking again, you know, she asks you to sleep beside her most nights. Is it adding to the problem? I don't think it's adding to the problem, but I'm really interested in why she needs this. And I'm wondering, is she going to bed heightened emotionally after a tense day or a lot of rows with her mum? And actually, is she holding a residual tension that she needs that level of comfort going to sleep? So it's not that this is adding to the problem. I think it might be a symptom of the problem, if that makes sense. And look at mother-daughter relationships in preteen and teen years. I mean, this is only going to increase if I could, you know, be terribly cruel and honest about it. It's often fraught. It really is. Because what we find is like a daughter is trying to please her mother, because ultimately children want to please their parents, believe it or not. They might go a roundabout way of doing it, but they do. But at the same time, she's trying to seek and secure independence. I'm nothing like you. You know nothing. I know everything. That kind of very normal developmental battle. And that can lead to conflict and heightened emotionality. I'm going to add a wondering in here. Is she like her mum? Could they be quite alike?
Yeah.
And I'm also wondering if she can see, and it's obviously clear if this other parent can name it as well, that her brother is idealized. And I wonder what that's like for her. He loves school, she doesn't. And to not like school and still be able to make friends and get on with it, I mean, that's a difficult thing to do. So I think a bit of empathy around, it's tough not to like school. And I'm really proud of you for making it work anyway. And I really think that you have to break it. Also, again, just the bit that jumped out at me there when you were reading it is, you know, the telling lies. I mean, show me an 11-year-old who hasn't
told fibs or lies.
Learning to lie is developmentally important. Learning how to get away with it is also a stage of development.
Oh, dear.
But at 11, everything I'm reading here is quite normal developmentally. But this is really, really difficult because I don't see any fun. I'm not hearing any fun in the relationship. Where are the opportunities for shared joy between her and her mum? That's really important. That mum is bringing her to basketball, but sports isn't her thing. It's dad's thing.
Yeah.
You know, what is the common thing? I don't care how small it is. Do they like even the same TV show they could sit for 30 minutes and watch together and talk about? Do they like, you know, to go get their nails done? Do they like to go for walks if she's active? Could mum go out for a jog with her? Find something that they have a common interest in. They need that moment of meeting. And then once you've got something small, you've at least got that moment. And you can grow it as time goes, but at least you have that something. And I think it's about coming down and saying at the end of the day, from mum, I mean, if mum's able to do this, today wasn't a great day. we just didn't get on really well. And I feel badly that we ended up shouting or that things didn't go as well as I hoped when I got up this morning. And I'm hoping tomorrow will be a better day.
Mm.
And she might go, whatever, it's all your fault. And that's OK. She's being 11.
Yeah.
But we can also model a different way as the adult. And it is OK to say it really hurt my feelings. And because my feelings got hurt, I shouted at you. That's why I shouted. Because that teaches her when she gets emotionally aroused, she might shout.
Mm.
The kids often need a paint by numbers on overt behaviour is underpinned by an emotional state.
Yeah.
So we do that for them by reflecting our own process back to them.
But I wonder, is she kind of aware of the fact as Dad has described here that her brother is the golden boy, mummy dotes on him, doesn't dote on you.
I'm sure she's aware of that. Even if it's not true, kids tend to decide it's true. I mean, so if it is there's no doubt she sees you're different with him than you are with me. So I'm going to spotlight my relationship with Daddy because I can be special to him.
Yeah.
And what you do want to avoid is splitting between parents, but it is happening a bit. Really what she needs is, in spite of her prickly, fighting, resistant tendencies, that there's an opportunity to show her affection every day. She mightn't receive it, but show it, offer it, make it available. Don't compare her behaviour to that of her brother. Really don't do that. And, you know, let her know how to please you. You know, really be clear about what you want her to do rather than not want her to do.
Yeah.
And don't assume, sure, she knows that. No, actually, I'd be very direct about that.
Yeah. Dad may well be listening. He may have to go and describe all this to Mum, which might be an easy
conversation. Play it in the back and go, isn't that an interesting story?
Joanna, thanks a million for coming into us. Joanna Fortune there. We're going to take a break. After that, the ice cream wars.